lest we forget. It's Monday, the 25th of April, 2016. Happy birthday to Tim Duncan. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Loot Crate and RGYYTR. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to sponsor the podcast and be like RGYYTR, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes and you can be that sponsor. Thank you to everyone who has done that. It helps the show out enormously. And thank you again to RGYYTR. My name is Josh Lloyd, as I hope I mentioned, and if you are watching this podcast live on YouTube, you can interact with the show by tweeting at me at redrock_bball. You can tweet at me at any time, of course, but if you want to get it live onto the show, just tweet at me at that Twitter handle, which you can see beneath my head on the screen at the moment. I started off the podcast with a lest we forget. Everyone in Australia will know what that means. Today is Anzac Day in Australia, which is our I think it's equivalent to Memorial Day over the States. It's our day of thanks and gratitude towards the military over here. So that is our day today. So we pay our respects to everyone in the Australian and New Zealand military on this date today, which is the 25th of April. We've got basketball to talk about as well, though. So
let's get to it.
Before we get into the action from the day, I'm sure plenty of you are waiting to hear my thoughts. Well, maybe plenty of you, maybe one of you is waiting to hear my thoughts on Byron Scott's demise in Los Angeles. And I've got a couple of things to say about it. You know that Byron Scott, you probably know that Byron Scott's the worst coach in the NBA. You know that I thought that he was the worst coach in the NBA, at least until Kurt Rambis took over in New York. He's been terrible. And he's been a lot of things for this team. And it's about time that he was gone. And I tweeted it out today that he should have. It's a week too late, and people, you know, like, I think you spelled year incorrectly. And yes, it's a year too late. He should have been fired easily before this season. But they're committed to keeping him this season, and that's fine. But if you're going to make the decision to get rid of Byron Scott, you don't do it now. You do it a week ago. Two coaches are already off the table with Scotty Brooks gone, or Earl Watson's gone, you know, signed in Phoenix. Tom Thibodeau has gone to Minnesota. We know that, and we've heard talk about Thibodeau wanting to go to LA. We've heard issues with LA not wanting him to have control in the front office, whatever. But don't do it now. Do it earlier. Get yourself an interview with these guys. Get yourself get Scotty Brooks in there. I think Brooks would have been a pretty good coach for this team, to be honest. And get him in there rather than holding onto this charade that Scott's going to stay around. You either knew he was staying around or you knew he was gone. Nothing in this last week changed your mind. Or you know what, Byron, in this last week, he hasn't been on vacation and he hasn't done that well enough. Like, what is it in the last week? You've made your decision. You should have made your decision months ago. So I don't understand what took so long, why it took a week for that to happen. And also, another thing that a lot of people are out there, congratulations, Byron, he did exactly what he needed to do. Tank Commander Byron Scott, exactly what needed to be done. He did a good job, all that sort of stuff. It's bullshit, in my opinion. Anyone could go out there and lose games. To think this is, would have to be the pitch. Byron, we want you to be the coach because we know you're the worst option out there. What are you going to say? Oh, thanks, guys. I really appreciate that, Jim. That's a great sentiment. Yeah, look, I'll try to be as terrible as possible. Everything for the franchise. Do you really think that that's why they hired him? We know that this guy's shit, so we're going to hire him. Yeah, look, he was terrible. But it's not just about winning or losing games. You could have put a young coach in there, a guy to develop, who could have actually grown with the talent and made that decision. Yeah, to stay there and grow. Much like, you know, look, I bagged the Phoenix. I didn't bag the hire of Earl Watson in Phoenix. I bagged the process of it. I think Watson's fine. You hire a developmental guy. Do that. There's going to be growing pains there as well. I don't think they've gone out and said, you are the worst coach we can find, Byron. Congratulations, we have a deal. I'd be stunned if that's what happened. But it's not just losing games. It is demoralization of staff, of playing staff. Like, the things that he would say and the developmental hindrance that he put on players is my issue with Byron Scott, of what he did with D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle to a degree as well. He made baffling decisions last season. Yeah, they could have kept Jeremy Lin on at this team and played him, and he would have been a serviceable guy. He's not a guy that makes a massive difference to a team, but they ruined that situation last season. They didn't give Clarkson a starting job until about over halfway through the year when they were playing Ronnie Price for games and games and games in a row. Everything he did didn't make any sense. The way he handled the media, the way he handled his players was my biggest issue. Not just how bad he is, and he's horrible as a coach. You look at his record, it is terrible. You know, for a guy who's a defensive coach, he's had the worst defense in the league basically over the last three or four seasons. He's horrific. But it's the way he's handled things, the way he's spoken about his players, the way he's spoken to his players or hasn't spoken to his players in many cases, that's my concern. And that doesn't just happen this season. That sort of crap lingers for time. And it's not ideal. That's my issue with him. So to those people who say, yeah, he's in there as a tank commander, I really doubt the validity of Byron, we're hiring you because you're the worst at your job. I can't see that conversation going down. Maybe it's just me, but it's a baffling one to me to be that's the way they're running a franchise. But you know what? The Lakers make dumb decisions all the time, so maybe that is the case. But it's the longer lasting impact that we don't know if there'll be a longer lasting impact, but you can't treat people the way that he did, and it's not good for their development. That's all I'll say on Byron Scott. Let me know. Disagree, agree, tweet at me. You know where to find me. Let me know what your thoughts are on Byron Scott and whether I'm way off base there. I don't think I am. Let's get into the monstrous DFS line of the night, and that goes to Paulie Millsap of the Atlanta Hawks. He is also the value play of the day because he returned in excess of 9x value. He put up 74.1 DFS points at 8,200. He went for 45 points. He hit 3 triples, had 13 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 4 blocks. This guy is a tremendous player. He kept the Hawks in the game. He slowed down a little bit in the end when Marcus Smart went on to him, which we'll talk about a bit later. But this was a tremendous Millsap game. I've been talking about this is a great series for Millsap. The matchups are there, and you just had to stick with him. And hopefully you played him in DFS because you would have cleaned up today if you happened to have him in your lineup. There's been a couple of stinkers in there. Game 3 was terrible, but everything is pointing to him having a big game, and it definitely came through in this one. On the flip side, the DFS dud of the night. Of course, it has to go to Steph Curry. He was a guy that I was telling you that I don't think you should be using. Yesterday I said I wouldn't be putting Steph in any of my lineups because of the uncertainty of his ankle, and if he plays and they limit him, I didn't foresee him slipping on Donatas Motiejunas' sweat and spraining his knee. I didn't foresee that happening, obviously, but he was never a great play anyway. But Curry, he was bad when he played. He wasn't good. He was 2 of 9 for 6 points and 5 assists in 19 minutes, but that's not the story. The story is the injury to Curry with that knee sprain. It looks like it's going to keep him out time. If I had to guess at this point, I would say 2 weeks, but that's based on pulling figures out of my ass. Not really. Doing a little bit of research on it, but it appears to be 2 weeks at this point, but we just don't know. And obviously the MRI that'll be happening Monday will shed more light on the situation. I also mentioned this on Twitter today, but people who are saying that they shouldn't have gone for 73, look what happens. That is ludicrous. It is beyond ludicrous. It's got nothing to do with playing for 73. It's to do with the fact that Motiejunas fell over in front of Steph Curry and Curry slipped on his sweat. Nothing to do with playing him with a sore ankle. Absolutely nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with going for 73. Just completely bad luck. And we all want Steph to be back. I hope everyone wants Steph to be back. We want him to play. We want the Warriors to be the Warriors. They're the most fun team we've seen in years. We want him out there. I'm not a Warriors fan, but I want him out there. I want him playing. Also, some absolute dickhead, I don't remember who it was. Maybe it's best I don't remember who it was in case I get into an argument with him. It was bagging Curry, saying that, oh, this injury, we're going to see what Curry's made it of. Let's see how tough he is. Stars have to step up and play through it like Jordan did with the flu game. There has not been a stupider comment uttered on Twitter today. And that's a big statement. Maybe that's too big of a statement. But to compare someone spraining their knee to Michael Jordan having a hangover and playing through it, you can't play through a torn ligament. And that's what a sprain is, everyone. It's a tear in a ligament. You can't play through it. I don't care how tough you are. It is bullshit. And to say that Curry's not tough because he won't play through the injury is just ridiculous. And these people who have got their heads buried either in their ass or in the past need to pull it out, because it is a joke to compare that to Steph, to compare his toughness, which is such a bullshit word. It's the opposite of soft, which you know that I hate that as a term. It is ludicrous for someone to have said that, and that guy was getting rightly roasted on Twitter, and it's not on. You cannot say that sort of stuff. Well, you can say it, but you're going to be looked like you've got an IQ of 60. if you say that sort of thing, because it is the most batshit insane thing that I've heard anyone comment on this situation. I've got all that off my chest. Let's get into these box scores. But before we do that, I'm going to take a quick break to have a word from our sponsor, which today is Loot Crate. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service. It's for Epic Geek and Gamer items, and it's for pop culture gear as well. Each month, it's $20, less than $20 a month. You get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Each month, they have a specific theme that the guys at Loot Crate put together, and you have until the 19th of that month to grab that specific theme. Last month's theme is done, so now we're waiting for Loot Crate to announce what's going to be there for May, and we'll be looking at whatever items they collect for us. So if you're into this sort of stuff, if you're into geek items, gamer items, nerdy items, which, let's be honest, pretty much everyone is at this point, head across to Loot Crate, but don't go to the boring lootcrate.com. Don't Google Loot Crate. That's the boring way to do it. Go to lootcrate.com/redrock, and that helps tell the people at Loot Crate, you know what, I listen to Josh, I listen to the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show, and that's where I found out about you guys. Head to lootcrate.com/redrock, and if you like it, and if you want to buy a subscription, and or buy it for yourself, or one of your friends, or your nephew, or your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, or whatever, use the coupon code. Red Rock, it's one word. It saves you $3 on any new subscription. So if you haven't checked out Loot Crate yet, go and browse it, lootcrate.com/redrock. Check what they've got to offer. And in doing so, you're helping support the podcast as well. All right, let's talk about the perfect DFS lineup from Sunday's games. Now, at point guard, it was Isaiah Thomas, who went for 46.8. Another big game for Thomas, and I'll save that for the game. I'll save that for the game review later. And Kyrie was big as well. He's been fantastic in the playoffs as the Cavs sweep the Pistons, 42.1 for Kyrie. At shooting guard, both of these guys stepped up big time. Evan Turner, 36.4, looks really at home at the moment. He's going to make himself a lot of money in the playoffs. And Marcus Smart at 37.1. What an absolutely massive performance from Smart. It was insane down the stretch what Smart was doing. He was putting up numbers, and he was, to me, aside from Millsap, he was the best player in that game, which is an amazing thing to say. At small forward, Iguodala stepped up with Curry going down, 35 points for Iggy, and LeBron had 46.2. For the power forwards, Millsap, 74.1. That's an obvious one. Toby Harris had a big game in an elimination loss, 40.6. And the Birdman chiming in at center, going for 28.6. Did not see that one coming in the Grizzlies' loss, and they're eliminated from the playoffs as well. That lineup would have netted you a massive 386.9 points. Before we get into these box scores, had a tweet come in from, who was it from? Daniel Charles, of course. Daniel Charles loves watching the show live. He says, I saw someone on Twitter say Kobe might replace Byron Scott. Do you see that happening? I'd say there is less than a 0% chance of that happening. Kobe has zero interest in coaching. From everything I've heard him say, everything I've seen written about him, I think he would be a horrible, horrible, horrible coach. Horrible. And that's nothing against Kobe. People who are exceptional talents, who are your basketball geniuses, so to speak, and this goes for any sport, really, someone who is the top 0.001% of players to ever play the game, which, if whatever you say about Kobe, he is up there. He is a top 15 player of all time, probably. Top 20, maybe. He's in that ballpark. They make bad coaches because they have so much ability in their body that they can't fathom that people can't do it. And they go out there and they'll be like, why can't you just hit a fadeaway turnaround jump shot with three guys on you? That's easy. I can do that. System? What system? Just give me the ball and let me do it. That's Kobe's mindset. We've seen that being his mindset throughout his entire career. How is he going to be able to coach that? Add in the fact that he doesn't get along with people. He has no friends. He's abrasive. Or maybe he would be the perfect Byron Scott replacement. He would be a horrible coach. And he doesn't want to do it. Kobe in the media would be sensational. He would be the greatest. We had a terrible day in NBA analysts today. We had Mark Jackson followed by Reggie Miller, which was almost enough to mute the TV. Reggie Miller was saying some ridiculous things, and the comment he made about Isaiah Thomas about being a small giant was one of the more brain-dead comments I've ever heard, and that's just scratching the surface of what happened. Put Kobe in their spot, and it is instant must-see TV. He would be amazing in the media. As a coach, horrible. The games, the Spurs and the Grizzlies. The Spurs get the victory. That game, that series is over in four. And it sort of happened, as we mentioned it would yesterday, that the Spurs would get an easy victory and that the minutes wouldn't be there for their stars. And that's what happened. Kawhi played 28. West played 20. Aldridge played 26, Duncan played 19, Parker played 21, Paddy Mills only got 20 minutes. They spread the rotation out. It's horrible for DFS. It got them through. That's all that was needed. Again, Danny Green sucked. He had 2 points in 18 minutes. But it was a situation where using any of these guys in DFS was a real tough one to sort of sell. On to the Grizzlies, Matty Barnes played a lot of minutes. He played 45, went 15, 7, and 4. Two steals, a block, and a three, so a nice performance from him. But the game was such a blowout as well that guys like Zebo only had to play 22 minutes. He didn't get much playing time. Tone Allen played 16. Jordan Farmar struggled in his 28 minutes. Xavier Munford had 2 points in his 20 minutes. It was just a nightmare, although Lance Stephenson came through with 26 points in 35 minutes. Not a good game. Birdman, his best game probably of the season, 24 minutes for him, 7-13 with a steal and a block, and we saw his name appear on the perfect DFS lineup. That game was not a good one. Let's move on to the next one, which in the end was not a good one either. The Warriors smashed the Rockets. A ridiculous third quarter from the Warriors. I think they dropped 41 points in that quarter. Houston gave up. They weren't trying. They were embarrassing. Klay Thompson wasn't embarrassing. He went 23-2-5 with 7 triples as the Warriors broke an NBA record for most 3-pointers in a playoff game, hitting 21. We saw Iggy step up and go 22-5-4 in Steph's absence, and Sean Livingston was also good. So we know that when Steph's going to be out, Livingston's going to be the guy to go for in DFS. He played 23 minutes here and went 9-5-9, and until they raise his salary, which might only take a game, he's going to be worth looking at. Harry Barnes, he was all right, 12-4-2. Draymond had 18-8-6 with 4 triples. A lot of big performances in this one. Bogey, he fouled out in 14 minutes. He went 7 boards, 6 points, and 2 steals. And Ian Clark got hot as well. He had 5 points in his 13 minutes. I say got hot because he hit a couple of big shots, or hit both of his shots that he took, and in that third quarter, I think it was. Not much else to really talk about for the Warriors. Obviously, the big story there is Steph Curry. For the Rockets, Jim Harden, 18-7-10 with 7 steals and 2 threes. That's a massive performance from him, doing what he can despite the lack of talent around him and some of his issues of his own. Mick Beasley went for 17 points in 19 minutes, and when you're relying on Beasley as your second scoring option, it's really not going to turn out well. Dwighty Howard was pretty good, 19-15, while Trevor Ariza struggled again. He has really struggled in this series. The Rockets also missed Pat Beverley. He only played 16 minutes and did not return after suffering a right leg strain. He had 2-2. That's going to make it almost impossible for them to do anything, even without Steph, because they're going to have to play Andrew Gadlock. They're going to have to play Jason Terry. And it's not going to work out well. Terry played 27 minutes and went 9-4-3. He could be a sneaky DFS option if Beverley is out, just because he's going to have to play 30 minutes. And at minimum salary, something will give. But I don't know how much it will. Donatas Motiejunas, decent minutes again, 25. He had 8-4-2, not the same performance that he had in Game 3, but still a worthwhile performance at minimum salary, while Clint Capela has been invisible in this series, and that is not something that I like. The next game, the Atlanta Hawks and the Boston Celtics, an overtime game, a really, really good contest. We talked about Millsap. Al Horford, disappointing with only 5 points, but he did have a triple one. He had 9 boards and 5 assists, but not his best night. Kent Bazemore struggled as well, going 5-8, but contributed with 2 steals and a block as well. And Kyle Korver played 47 minutes, the most in the entire game. He had 10 points with 3 triples and 8 rebounds, but no one shot well. 37% the Hawks shot from the field. Jeff Teague was bad. He went 13-2-5 with 3 threes, including 2 threes late to put the game into overtime. And then the worst end of game play I have ever seen from Teague. I think 20 seconds on the clock maybe when he got the ball, maybe 15, whatever it was. There was no shot clock. He held the ball and he literally stood still until there was 3 seconds on the clock. He dribbled to his left, attempted to take a shot, and the ball slipped out of his hands, tried to catch it and shoot it, and time was up. Not one player moved on the court. Teague left it 5, 6, 7 seconds too late to do anything. It was the most what are you doing moment I've seen in a basketball game. Like, somebody move, somebody do something. It was just crazy. Dennis Schroeder played a lot in this one. He was equally ineffective. He was 3 of 13. Teague was 4 of 18. Schroeder had 7 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and got the shots, but did really struggle. And I'm not sure why it took so long to get Teague back in the final quarter. Timmy Hardaway played just 4 seconds, so obviously his place in the rotation is not looking that great at the moment. On to the Celtics, Isaiah Thomas went 28-4-6. He had 2 blocks and 2 triples, while Marcus Smart was incredible. He hit 2 big threes in the fourth quarter, went for 28-5, had 2 steals, hit 3 triples in total, went 7 of 15 from the field, hit all 3 of his free throws, and basically went on to Paul Millsap and shut him down. And this is a guy who's a point guard going onto a power forward and stopping him, because Millsap was literally unstoppable before Smart went onto him. Smart went onto him. I think he scored 3 more points for the game after Marcus Smart went onto him. Smart rebounded super aggressively. You know that I've been massively big on what Marcus Smart can do. It's been his shooting that's letting him down, and I've said plenty of times he is going to be a 15-5-5, 2 steals, 2 threes a guy a game. That's what I think that he can provide, at least 15 points in that sort of situation. And he showed it here. He is going to be really, really good for this team. But the shooting needs to pick up. And he got hot today. And he's as balls to the wall as anybody in the NBA. He's as aggressive as anybody in the NBA. And I think that's going to serve him well. It might lead to injuries, as we've seen over his first 2 seasons. A couple of severe leg injuries have bothered him. But I really enjoy Marcus Smart. And it's not the best time to go and buy low on him in a dynasty now. But if he has a stinker in the next game, I'm trying to get him, because I know what he can produce. And I know that he can be a really useful fantasy asset. This sort of performance is something that is not going to be abnormal from him moving forward. 28-5, 2 steals and 3 threes. It'll just feel like normal for Marcus Smart in a few years' time. Amir Johnson played 28 minutes. He went 9-9 with 3 blocks. And Kelly Olynyk returned. He only got 4 minutes, which bothers me immensely. He's obviously not right. But they did start Jonas Jerebko again, which I do enjoy. 16-10 with 3 triples. Turner went 17-7-6. And Crowder went 12-5-2 with 2 threes and 2 steals. Sullinger not really providing much at the moment at all. 2 points and 6 rebounds in his 17 minutes. The last game was the Cavs and the Pistons. LeBron, 22-11-6 with 2 steals. Big game. Kyrie, 31-3-5 with 4 threes. Big game. J.R. Smith, 15 points, all from 3. Big game. Yep, cool. Kevin Love was poor, really poor shooting, 3 of 15, but he had 13 boards. He hit a 3, he had a steal. That's pretty useful. And 4 of those rebounds were offensive as well. So he was quite good in that sort of sense. Tristan Thompson has really struggled in this season. 5-5 in this series. 5-5 in his 38 minutes. We saw no Tim Mozgov again, with Channing Frye getting the backup center minutes. And Iman Shumpert being reduced slowly each game down to 9 minutes here for Shumpert. Dellavedova had 11 points in his 15 minutes. And he's been a valuable contributor for this team throughout the playoffs. On the Pistons, Toby Harris, 23-13, 2 threes and 2 assists. A big game from Toby. Same with Marcus Morris, who had 24 points, but not a lot else there from Morris. Reggie Jackson went 13-3-12. Not bad. And Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, only the 9 points, but 4 rebounds, 5 assists and 2 steals. That's a pretty decent performance. While Andre Drummond actually hit 50% of his free throws, which for him is basically a victory. 17-11 in 31 minutes. Good to see Stan Johnson getting 30 minutes and Steve Blake only playing 11. Johnson wasn't super effective, going 5-5, and disappointed they didn't play Spencer Dinwiddie at all in this series, because Steve Blake was really just an abomination. The Pistons were better for this experience. Toby Harris looked good. Morris is solid. And Stanley Johnson's going to be a guy who I think should replace Marcus Morris at some point heading into some point next season. You know, Jackson's there, Caldwell Pope's there, Drummond is there, and if the league rules change, Drummond becomes even more of a beast. I think they've got something happening in Detroit, which is something I'm sure Detroit fans will be pretty keen to hear. Not that they need me to tell them, because they've obviously been seeing it happening. But they're looking decent, and they pushed the Cavs in pretty much every game. It was a sweep, but there was no blowouts, really. They pushed the Cavs, they kept things close, and I think that's all you can ask for as an 8 seed with a young team. It was their first time in the playoffs for most of these players, if not all of them. Really good signs for things in Detroit moving forward. All right, I'm just going to pause for a quick break for a word from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to talk DFS for Monday. All right, the first game we're going to look at on Monday is the Miami Heat and the Charlotte Hornets. It's game 4. The series is 2-1 to Miami. The Hornets are favored here by 3 points, and the total is 195.5. Hassan Whiteside sat out practice with a thigh issue. He is going to play. He's probable. We've got Tyler Johnson listed as questionable. Even if he plays, what impact is he going to have? Even if he's clear to play, he might not get on the court. There's a big chance of that. And Nick Batum has miraculously been upgraded to questionable. We thought he was out for the series. Then he was just out for game 3 and 4. Now he's questionable for game 3. When I talk about my DFS picks of the day, I'm doing it assuming that Batum is out. But if you're on basketballmonster.com, you can use our what if scenarios to see the value of players if Batum is in and if Batum is out. So that will give you an idea of where the value lies. Let's look at the point guards. Kemba Walker is at 8,000. Look, he's been all right. He put 35 up in the last game. He's averaging 32 across the series so far, which is pretty good. It's not spectacular, though, and it's not it's not really $8,000 worth, whereas Goran Dragic at 6,600 in a similar boat, he's been solid. He's averaging 26 points. But at 6,600, he's not quite at that right level. I could understand using either of them, but I wouldn't be falling over myself to put them into a lineup and hopefully something comes up. At shooting guard, that's the position I'm looking for. Dwayne Wade has had a pretty good series. He's priced at 7,600. He's averaging 35 across the series so far. I like using Wade here. He was a little bit disappointing in game three, but still put up 27 points. I think if you're looking to spend up at shooting guard, he should be a guy you look at. But with the way things are rolling on Monday, you're going to need to spend up at point guard because there are no good cheap point guards out there, but there's a lot of cheap options at shooting guard. So I'm not sure that's the wisest investment. Jeremy Lin has risen by $500 in his salary up to $4,700. If Batum is out, I do really like him. He put up 31 in the last game, and I imagine he gets 30-plus minutes again if Batum happens to be out. If Batum is in, then Lin's value at $4,700 just isn't there. Joshie Richardson at 41 has struggled throughout the playoffs, averaging just 16 points. He might have a hot game. He's a GPP target, but not a great option. Whereas Courtney Lee, the same sort of story. He's averaging 16 points in 39 minutes in the three games so far. He's at 3,800, so he's a little bit appealing in that sense, but it feels like it's going to be hard for him to put up a good game. And if Batum plays, I wouldn't even bother punting him in a tournament. For the small forwards, there's Batum, obviously, there. If he plays, if he doesn't, we don't know at this point. I don't think I'd be keen to use him, even if he does play coming off an ankle injury. Marvin Williams bounced back. He's more of someone that I do like if Batum is out. I don't mind him if Batum is in, but at 5,100, he dropped 31 in the last game. He had two stinkers to start off. Hopefully he's regained his touch. I'm okay using Marvin. Justice Winslow not providing anything, and Joe Johnson, look, you get the feeling that Joe Johnson's going to have a big game, and at 4,600, it's not exorbitant, but it's not super appealing either. If he was at 4,000, I'd be smashing him in GPP lines because I think he's going to have a big game. I think he's probably going to have a big game in game five, would be my guess. So I'm a little bit off using him here. At power forward, good news for Chris Bosh in that he came out and said he's not planning on retiring, but we're not seeing Chris Bosh again this season, and hopefully he can get everything sorted. Frank Kaminsky at 3,700 had 28 points in the last game. He's going to have a role regardless of if Batum plays. He's going to have a 20-minute role, but if Batum doesn't play, he's going to play 30 minutes, and then he's an absolute must-play at 3,700 if Batum is out. Must-play. 6,600 for Luol Deng. He's been okay in a similar mode to the way Dragic has been at 6,600. Deng has been more productive than Dragic. He's averaging 33 across the series. I think he's an okay guy to use, but he's definitely not blowing my doors off as a power forward. Stoudemire, Josh McRoberts, neither of those guys are either. All right, question here from J Motion. He says, Marvin Williams is at small forward now. How does that change things at the power forward position for Charlotte? Well, it puts Frank Kaminsky there. That's what they did in the last game with Batum out. They moved Marvin Williams down to the three. They played Frank at the four, and they played Cody Zeller at the four some. They played Spencer Hawes there. They ran Kaminsky, Hawes, Zeller, and Jefferson as the guys who played through those two positions, and Marvin Williams played at the three. So if Batum plays, Marv goes back to the four, but that's what they're running. If Batum is out, they play Kaminsky at the four, and they put Batum at the three. At the center position, Cody Zeller was really good off the bench. He put up 22 points in 26 minutes. He's at 4,400. He's an okay guy to use, but I'm not massively in love with Cody Zeller. He has struggled at times during the season and during the series. I don't love it. Hassan Whiteside at 8,600. I feel like he almost guaranteed 40 points from Whiteside. He got 42 in game three. He's averaging 41 across the three games in this series. The matchup is not all that difficult with Al Jefferson out there. I think that Whiteside feels like pretty much a lock for 40 points. Jefferson at 5,800, it's way too expensive for me to get interested in. Yes, he is averaging 27 points across the series, but in the minutes that he gets, which generally are pretty limited, I don't feel confident in using Al Jefferson. The next game is the Dallas Mavericks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Kevin Durant is not suspended, so that's good news for the Thunder as they attempt to close it out back in Oklahoma City for Game 5 with a 3-1 lead. Let's look at the point guards. There's no Darren Williams. JJ Barea is probable, but he's also probably going to be really bad like he was in the last game because he just can't move. So that means Ray Felton is now at $6,000. It's tough to say I'm spending $6,000 on Ray Felton, but he's averaging 35.5 points across the series. He had 38 in the last game. Barea is not going to be able to handle 30 minutes. Williams is not going to be there. Felton will get 30+. He will get 35, most likely. And I think that he is worth using, definitely. We know that... We know that Westbrook's defense is not ideal. Felton's worth a look. On the flip side, Russ Westbrook at 10,600. This is where I think you should be spending your money. He had 55.5 points in the last game. He's averaging 50 across the series. You should be able to get a 50 out of Russ at that salary, and you put some of those cheaper guys in at shooting guard, like we talked about, and chuck a Frank Kaminsky in at power forward. Barea, yeah, it's really tough to use him, given the fact that he can barely walk. At shooting guard, Devin Harris is going to have somewhat of an expanded role, but he really hasn't provided any interest in that spot. At 3,500, you could throw him into a tournament so you can get a guy like Westbrook and Whiteside into a lineup, but I'm not keen. Wes Matthews at 49, the salary is dropped by $100, which is okay. He's been averaging 25 points across the last three games. He's been all right, but he's not spectacular. Dion Waiters has been pretty good, and at 3,800, you'd love getting 21-point average over his last three games. He had 23 points in the last one, but that's two big games in a row for Dion. Not sure that he can do it again, so I'd probably be interested in fading him, except in a tournament situation. Small forward, 10,000 for Durant. You feel like a big game has to come. He hasn't been good so far. He's averaging less than 40 points across the series. He only got 33 in the last one. He's been frustrated. His shot hasn't been falling. A big game has to come. I think it has to be here. Justin Anderson on the other side, if you're looking for another cheap option, he's at 3,800. He hasn't been spectacular, but he's getting you 17, 18, 19 points a night. And at 3,800, that's enough to keep you afloat in order for you to get Westbrook in, or for you to get Durant in, or for you to get Whiteside in. You're getting a guy that just gets you 20 points. That might be enough. And I think Anderson's a guy that, you know, could have a game where he has a big performance. It's a little bit of a long shot, but I don't mind it. Power forward Serge Ibaka has been quite consistent throughout these playoffs, which is not something we could have said for him in the regular season. He's at 5,900. He's averaging 28 across the last three games. The salary has actually dropped after one subpar performance in game four, and even then he got 24 points. Fine with using Serge. Dirk's up to 7,000 and was tremendous in game four. He's going to have to fight like hell to keep in this series. I think using Dirk at 7,000 is definitely a fine investment, whereas David Lee is just putrid. He's at minimum salary. I would have zero interest in using him even at that salary point. Salah Mejri is questionable, so if Mejri doesn't play, maybe Lee gets minutes, but he's just so bad, I think they're better off giving it to JaVale McGee. At centre, Enes Kanter was dominant in the last game. He is at $5,000. I think that is a very wise investment at $5,000 for Kanter. He dropped 34 in the last game. He's averaging 29 across the last three, including a poor performance. He is on fire. Love using him. 44 for Steven Adams. That's all right. Nothing great. If Mejri is out, Zaza Pachulia at 3,800. Do we look there? No, because I reckon Dwight Powell and McGee get absorbed the minutes rather than Pachulia playing 30. I just don't think that that's the way that it's going to go. The next game it's the last game of the night, and it is the Los Angeles Clippers and the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers got their victory in Game 3. They'll be looking to tie the series up here in Game 4. At point guard, Dame Lillard is at 8,100. Not massively keen. He had a decent game in the last one, but it gave him just 36 points, which at 8,100 is not all that appealing. I would rather spend up and get Westbrook and get 50 out of him than get 35 out of Lillard. And with Chris Paul on him, not really convinced. Paul, on the other hand, at 9,800... look really good. He's averaging 48 across the series, which is tremendous, obviously. Fine. If you don't want to spend the $10,500 on Westbrook, $9,800 on Chris Paul to get 45 points is a pretty decent way to go. So he's in consideration, but not a must play. Austin Rivers, it's going to take an injury. At shooting guard, no interest in JJ Redick. The minutes just aren't there because of his injured heel, whereas that puts Jamal Crawford more into the place. He's at 4,200. He had 24 in the last game, but hasn't really been great throughout this series. I reckon you can go a different direction, but if I'm spending 4,200 on a Clippers guard, it's Crawford and not Redick. On the other side, CJ McCollum broke out of his slump. He had 38 points. I don't expect him to go for 38 again, but I think he can cross 30. So if you're looking to spend up on shooting guard, which I don't think is necessarily the right option, McCollum is one of those guys that you have to consider. Gerald Henderson's been really bad, but he hasn't been as bad as Alan Crabb, who's been basically non-existent. At small forward, we're looking at Al-Farouq Aminu, who's at 5,500 and has been okay, but I just don't feel that his upside's really there. He's averaging 26 throughout the series. It's all right at 5,500. It's not great. So I reckon you can do better. Now, Mo Harkless, similar. At 5,100, had a decent game in the last game, but it yielded him just 17 points. He's not doing enough at that price. I think that there's an opportunity for him to go for a big game, but I'm not banking on it. Jeff Green, Marmute, Wes Johnson, Paul Pierce, none of those guys have any interest for me. At power forward, Blake Griffin is still way too expensive. He's at 8,800. He's not having to go full throttle. They're not putting him out there for big minutes. He's not doing everything. I don't like spending that much on Blake. Eddie Davis at 3,600, just not getting minutes at the moment because they're rightfully using more Mo Harkless and using more Mason Plumlee. Davis is good, but at 3,600, I need him getting 22, 23 minutes, and he's just not at that spot at this point. At center, speaking of Mason Plumlee, he's at 5,900. Love him here. He had 45 points in the last game. He's averaging 33.5 across the series. The salary's risen by $300, so that's making him a little bit harder to use. But at 5,900, I feel pretty confident in getting him out there. That said, though, I would rather go less and take Kanter or go more and take Hassan Whiteside. Jondre Jordan's a pretty decent option. He's averaging almost 40 across the series. He's at $8,000. He's another guy if you want to spend up at center. Absolutely fine getting him in there because I think that 37 to 40 points should be almost a guarantee for him. Cole Aldrich, my boy, is at 3,600. He's averaged 16 points across the series so far. He's been good, but it's just... yeah, he can get to 25, but he just needs that extra bump of minutes, and I'm just not really confident in it happening. But you know how much I like Cole Aldrich. Let's look at the DFS picks of the day now. At point guard, as I said, there's no cheap point guards that I like using. Ray Felton, 6,000. Russ Westbrook at 10,600. For the shooting guards, and I mentioned this before as well, this is assuming that Batum doesn't play. Jeremy Lin at 47, CJ McCollum at 7,000, and Dwayne Wade at 76. The small forwards, Justin Anderson, 3,800, Marvin Williams, 51, and Kev Durant, 10,000. The power forwards, Frankie Kaminsky, 37, Serge Ibaka, 59, and I don't like spending up at power forward because there's no one there that I like. Sorry, Blake Griffin. At center, Enes Kanter, 5,000, Mason Plumlee, 5,900, and Hassan Whiteside, 8,600. We're done. Congratulations to all of you who tweeted at me and the others who didn't, who took down some big tournaments and made themselves some significant money on Sunday. Well done to you guys. Hope you guys, if you didn't tell me about it, hope you did well and won some cash as well. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_Beeble. You can see that on the screen now for you guys watching on video. Basketball Monster is the place to go for all your fantasy information, projections, all that sort of stuff. And the Twitter account, which is at Basque Monster, with all the up-to-date information that we tweet out as soon as we get it. Leave a review on iTunes. It's super easy and it helps the show a lot. And give a thumbs up on YouTube as well. And thanks to that, there's one person who watches the show every day and gives a thumbs down. Maybe it's not the same person, but every day there's one person who gives a thumbs down. So thanks to that person as well. I'm always open to criticism. Just tell me what it is so I can fix what the problem is. That would be great. Anyway, thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.